A controversial coal bill clears a House committee. Hands-free driving legislation moves forward, plus speed cameras stall, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 24th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, environmentalists, utilities, and other groups spoke out against a bill that would make it harder to close coal plants. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports the measure would require utilities to get the state's permission to shut them down.
Republican Representative Ed Soliday, who co-chairs the 21st Century Energy Policy Development Task Force, authored the bill. He says utilities would have to get the state's permission for closures until the task force can come up with a statewide energy plan. Jared Noblet is the executive director of the Indiana Conservative Alliance for Energy. He says market forces are causing energy companies to close coal plants, and the state shouldn't intervene.
Forcing utilities to embrace expensive energy sources will raise prices for consumers while deliberately delaying our state's inevitable transition to cleaner and cheaper energy production.
Soliday proposed a temporary moratorium on new power plants last year, which would have put renewable energy and natural gas projects on hold.
Is this proposal a good idea? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, this question was raised in committee, so I'll ask it to you. Does this bill align with sort of Republican conservative principles?
Not traditional conservative principles of small government, non-government intervention, but we're dealing with the regulated monopolistic utility market, right? I mean, the government already decided they were going to take this industry over. It's operated, obviously, by shareholder companies and private companies, but so much of their activity is already regulated by the Utility Regulatory Commission. And so the state believes it has an interest, and the legislature over the years has expressed an interest in making sure that rates are appropriate, that if utilities want to make investments in their facilities, that they have the opportunity to do that and build some of the cost of that into a rate increase you still may be paying on a shuttered facility, right? So, I mean, there are policy reasons you would argue the state's got to get involved in this. And part of this is process. This is an 18-month effort to allow this energy task force to complete its work and really set out a vision for the utility industry and energy availability over the long term.
Lawmakers Soliday, Speaker Bosma this week said, you know, when they set up that task force last session, the idea was, let's everybody just take a pause on whatever we're doing, let's study this whole picture, and then go forward. And they're arguing that, well, this is just trying to make sure that pause is in place. Is that all this is?
I don't think so, and I think when you look at the actual committee, the only people in favor of this bill was the coal industry. You saw kind of an unholy alliance of all kinds of different advocates on environmentalists and utility companies saying this isn't the way to go. So I think it's more than that, and I think that it's highly unpopular.
It seems to me Ed Soliday is a bridge builder. He was bringing a lot of people together in that committee here. This went party line, the committee vote, but you were in that committee for the entire thing.
Yes.
Those votes didn't sound quite so secure on the Republican side.
No, and I actually don't think it would have passed at all except for the amendment that was added that sort of backed it down a little. A number of Republicans said, I'm still uncomfortable, but let's move it forward, which is not a new thing to hear in the legislature. But I think it was a vote to support their chairman and not embarrass him, you know, with this bill on the first time. And I think the real question will become whether it makes it actually to the floor or if this is an internal caucus vote just not to move forward.
Let's ask the public perception question, John. Indiana, there are coal miners in this state, in southern Indiana, and that was brought up more than once in this committee hearing. But when you talk about the broader public perception, does this bill look good?
Again, it is from where your perspective is. I mean, if you're somebody who works in the coal industry, you have one perspective. If you're somebody who sits in an office as part of a utility conglomerate, you probably have another perspective. If you're a consumer, you have yet another perspective. The challenge for Republicans is what has been articulated here, which is overcoming the sort of notion that we don't pick winners and losers in state government. Now, as
we pick winners and losers in state government all the time.
As a practical matter, we do it. We've done it with alcohol.
We pick our friends to win.
Oh yeah, we do it. Alcohol regulation. We've done it with nursing home regulation. You know, when can you build a nursing home? When can you add beds? When can you not? That's the history of the state of Indiana. So there's not anything shocking. You know, nobody should say I'm shocked that we would have
on gambling in this establishment.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but again, even though that's been standard operating procedure for as long as I can remember, you still will have some people who, when they look at that and they say, this does appear, well, it just doesn't just appear, but it is the long arm of government reaching in and saying, who can do what when?
Yeah. Well, a bill to ban drivers from holding cell phones while driving unanimously, a priority of Governor Holcomb's, by the way, passed a House committee this week. Several people who've lost loved ones to distracted driving gave emotional testimony in committee. One such Hoosier said the issue is simple. Every second a driver is looking at their phone is a second they're not looking at the road. Less simple is what exactly the bill would ban. State Police Superintendent Doug Carter says he believes the measure gives law enforcement clear guidance.
Is the device in the human hand? And it's visual. It's visual.
But some worry the bill's exact language would bar, for instance, Uber drivers from using their phones mounted to their dashboards. Still, no one testified against the legislation in committee, and the bill's authors committed to ensuring the language is clear. Elise Schrock, are you surprised this got through committee so easily?
I'm not surprised it got through the committee. It is a priority coming down from the second floor, and on its face, I think people understand the concept of how dangerous this can be. There's data that backs it up. What I do think will be interesting is moving forward, how the language this year looks and how it'll affect moving forward, because technology changes all the time. This is complex. People have Wi-Fi in their cars these days. So, and there may be new technology that we don't even know. So it's going to be interesting to see if this passes, how we'll have to come back in years over and over to kind of tweak it.
See it evolve. Mm-hmm. There are still lawmakers we hear at the State House who don't like the seatbelt law. Can we safely predict?
Still mad about that.
Yeah. Safely predict that this is not going to be unanimous through the process?
I don't think it'll be unanimous. There's a lot of libertarian, conservative members of this caucus who don't want the government's hands in any of this. And have expressed, you know, are we going to do this with food? Are we going to do this with talking, you know, in a car? I've got three kids, and when they're in the car, my phone is the last thing I'm distracted by, right? So I get all that. You know, Representative Sullivan, the author of the bill and the chairman of the committee, deserves a lot of credit. She pulled a broad coalition together of auto manufacturers, cell phone companies, road builders, and
law enforcement.
Law enforcement,
families
certainly.
Families who had been affected.
Families have been affected
by
it.
That was obviously very impactful.
It'll be interesting. I mean, these guys are going to have to... They're going to put their money where their mouth is and bring in secondary amendments to the floor that try to make light of this or have secondary amendments ban eating while driving. And some of them have mentioned that, the people that are opposed to this fundamentally. But there are a lot of people that say it's far too late for this. And we already passed this conceptually years ago, but it's unenforceable. It was always the problem.
Existing texting
right,
driving
you, right, because you can never prove what I was actually doing on this right. thing that now does a million things it didn't do 20 years ago. But you and I, we're from Illinois. I put my phone down when I crossed that border because they do not mess around. Yeah, they do not mess around with that, and so it's enforced properly. It will have an impact here.
And Chairman Sullivan talked a lot in the committee about two things. One, how do you enforce it? And two, public education. But in terms of getting this bill over the finish line, which it's, you know, pretty far away from that at this point, is the thing that it's got going for it more than anything else that it's instantly understandable?
On the surface it is, but then it's...
Well, it doesn't have to go for it.
Right? But it really isn't as simple as that because of the reasons that have been mentioned here. You do have to say, well, exactly what kind of devices? Well, within the devices, is it texting? Is it listening to music? Is it looking at a map? Is it, if you're an Uber driver, is it punching the buttons to check on your next fare? So it's not as simple as it might seem on the surface, but you're right. Bills that are readily obvious or seem readily obvious oftentimes do enjoy the benefit of public support. That's something that people hear that and they say, oh, yeah. You know, that's not reading through a 100-page tax bill. I get this. I can understand that. But having said that, I'm surprised that as you asked in your initial question, why there was not more opposition at committee. If this does go through, and it goes through in anything close to this fashion, it'll be a testament to the governor's work behind the scenes. And I should point out, he was a guest on Indiana Week in Review. Well, that's this show.
That's
Indiana,
this show.
Indiana Lawmakers.
On, shows.
On many of these same public broadcasting stations.
First of the season.
That first of the season. But I asked him that question, and he left no doubt. He basically said, it's a done deal. So he must, the arms are already, he must have ordered the casts for the, and the slings for the arms he's going to twist ahead of time, because he didn't seem to have much doubt.
Even a week ago, Nikki, there was a lot of doubt being expressed about the future of this bill, but then we all talked to Speaker Bosman and Senator Bray, and it sounded like things had changed in just a week.
Well, I mean, I think John's right. I mean, I think Speaker Bosman, for instance, told the governor, look, you need to start talking to the committee members, you need to start making your case. It's clear he's been doing that. I do find, you know, I sat during that hearing and listened, and there were some stunning things. I will admit that I was surprised, since we have like 20 other states that have this, that there's no data that actually shows that a hands-free law reduces crashes and accidents. Obviously, with .08 and things like that,
we can see that.
The data, it immediately drops. So, you know, usually we're all about looking at the data, so I'm hoping maybe I'm missing that when I'm doing some research, but maybe that'll come up in the future, too.
Well, speaking of priorities of the governor, legislation to allow speed cameras in highway work zones did not get a vote in a Senate committee this week, and its future this session is in doubt.
The proposed bill would only allow state police to issue tickets if a driver is caught on camera going at least 11 miles per hour over the speed limit in a highway work zone while workers are present. It also requires signs alerting drivers beforehand and only allows pictures of the rear license plate, not the driver's face. Construction companies, law enforcement, workers, and state officials all say it's about safety. But several lawmakers, including Republican Senator Phil Boots, don't like the cameras.
I have a problem with Big Daddy looking over my shoulder, so sorry.
Committee Chair Mike Kreider says the bill would have been defeated if he'd taken a vote. He says the measure needs stronger privacy protections.
Nikki Kelly, we just talked about the last bill's chances, which seem to be improving daily. What are this bill's chances?
I think this is maybe where they're going to put all their frustration on some of these bills. They're going to be like, we'll do hands-free, but no on speed cameras, which is funny because speed cameras does have the data and has shown that they, in the very small particular use of these in work zone areas, show a massive decrease in speed that when people are going through there, and therefore crashes and accidents. So I found it, you know, pretty interesting listening. They seem very bothered by the fact that you'll take a picture of someone's license plate, which I can do every day. And also, we already have this same technology in Indiana on the toll bridge down Southern.
Let me ask this, because we hear about these privacy concerns, but the way the bill is specifically written, and this was brought up in committee, is, and there are some states, they take a picture of the driver's face, the front of the car, the whole thing. This bill says back license plate, nothing more. What privacy concern exists when you're taking a picture of the back of my license plate? Or the
probably,
back of my car?
Well, it probably reduces some privacy concern, but there have been those on other issues where police have just generally monitored comings and goings of vehicles, not even in work zones, and people have raised concerns about overactive or overzealous surveillance. So, I mean, there's a reflexive reaction, I think, to the notion of bringing out cameras. You remove that human element. Yes, having it just focus on the back is probably, in the minds of these critics, preferable to getting the face, because then you can say, well, my cousin was driving, he looks like me, you can see, but look, the shadow, and you're going to get into a real mess. But I presume these are all civil penalties, because, and that should be made clear, too. Because if people think that, gee, I'm getting points toward having my license taken, which is not the case, and that's what you get with this basically has the ownership of the car, the registration of the vehicle, you're liable. So
But they also brought up that if you could somehow prove that it was your cousin or your wife or somebody else driving,
you have to have the internal camera going backward to show it's your son who's not.
John just brought something up. The human element. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to be, as I listened to the committee members talk about this, I think that seemed to be something that rankled them. The idea that almost it's like a robot is writing them a ticket instead of a human
right.
being. Which is not quite how it works anyway, but is that something that has to be overcome if this bill's going to go anywhere?
Well, that was explained in committee, that this is reviewed by local law enforcement or state police. before it, and then it's referred back into the system to kick out the ticket if they approve. The law enforcement in Indiana would have to sign off on the evidence that they collected with this camera. I kind of compare this a little bit to, and this is just using technology to improve policing, and it keeps the police officers safer because they don't currently mostly pursue people in a work zone because it's too dangerous to. And that police officer that's sitting in the front of the queue isn't jumping out of there because that's dangerous as well. So that's there as a deterrent. I kind of compare this to a breathalyzer. When we invented the breathalyzer, nobody said, well, none of the government's business how drunk I am. You've just got to guess and figure out that how drunk I am before you can arrest me for it.
I asked this question on the last one, which is public perception. The hands-free driving seems very simple. If you're driving or if you're a passenger in a car, you see people on their phones constantly. With this one, despite it's on the bridge and down south, most Hoosiers don't encounter cameras on the roadways very often. Is that going to be something they have to overcome too?
I think when it comes down to it, it's a safety issue. I think that there is heightened awareness, and there should be when you go through a work zone that you need to be slowing down, that if you don't, the penalties will be greater. That's already something that the public understands. I think they're broadly aware of speed cameras. I don't think this is going to be that different. I find it ironic that the committee and particular legislators are worried about big daddy government conspiracies, like big daddy looking over their shoulder. And in the same vein, there are plenty of proposals that you could argue they get to pick and choose their daddies.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Indiana allow speed cameras in highway work zones? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, and we got a lot of responses, who will be the Republican nominee for Attorney General in 2020? 67% of you say Curtis Hill, 27% say Adam Krupp, the newest entrant in the race, 2% say John Westerkamp, and 4% say someone else might rise up out of the ashes or the shadows or whatever it is. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana House Republicans rejected an attempt to exempt breastfeeding equipment from the state sales tax after Democrats offered that amendment on the House floor this week.
51 House Republicans voted against creating the exemption, while 10 and all Democrats voted for it. GOP Representative Tim Brown says the idea wasn't vetted through his committee, Ways and Means, and that he worries about shrinking the sales tax base.
I'm sure we could all think of things that might be important to our members, to our family, to our situation that we'd like to exempt from the sales tax.
Democratic Representative Ed Delaney pointed out that the underlying bill creates a sales tax exemption for RVs.
What is it? We have time for RV dealers, but we don't have time for mothers?
A fiscal analysis estimates exempting breast pumps from sales tax would cost the state at most about $1.8 million a year. The RV sales tax exemption will cost the state $1.9 million a year.
John Schwartz, I want to ask a question that's a little broader than just this week's amendment, which is we've seen amendments like these from time to time the last several years, particularly about feminine hygiene products, which are still taxed in the state of Indiana while a lot of other states have exempted it. How much longer can Republicans keep saying no to these amendments?
It's increasingly difficult because of the optics when you have this kind of construct. When you, on the one hand, we have a tax break, proposed tax break for RVs, and then here's something that, you know, couldn't be more essential, arguably, to early the growth of our youngest and most vulnerable members of our population with the breastfeeding equipment. So there's you can argue the philosophy, and it hasn't been through, it's been vetted by committee, and you can argue all that, but it's still, you have the juxtaposition, which is problematic, especially since this state, like so many other states across the country, has been wrestling with infant mortality. This has been a priority of the governor to work with. He mentioned it in last week in his State of the State address. He also was pushing for measures that would compel workplaces and employers to be friendlier, you might say, in their manner of dealing with women who are pregnant. Again, with an idea toward improving health care of those unborn as well as newborns. So to have, I mean, against that backdrop, that makes it more difficult.
And I think, and I ask that sort of broad trend question because I think we saw more Republicans crossing the line this time.
We did see
to vote
some
on the
Republicans
other side.
Cross. You know, this is that one was a rough one to listen to because you had one side making very cogent arguments about how, you know, breastfeeding helps, you know, increase the toddler's, you know, ability to thrive and, you know, how it can improve our dismal infant mortality rate. And then you had Republicans saying, like, well, what about the process? And, you know, we can't spend that much money, even though the bill itself spent more money on the RV dealers. So, you know, it's just like when they exempted gold bullion a couple of years ago. But we can never seem to get anything through that helps sort
women,
of...
women and make women a priority?
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk about, well, these are already covered by insurance. But the number of uninsured keeps going up every year. So that's just not...
And there was fundamental misunderstanding from Republicans about, like, one got up and said, well, I think these are already exempt from the sales tax. And two different reporters, I was one of them, quickly on our phone went to Amazon and went tried to buy a breast pump, which I'm looking forward to the ads I'm never going to get.
That's great.
And it absolutely charges the sales
tax. Yeah, darn near got a $400 breast pump.
This
man.
Whole thing is unnerving.
Yeah.
I mean, we hear from the governor, we hear from legislative leaders saying that infant mortality is a priority. We know it's an issue. And then a woman, a wonderful legislator, Carly Macer, Representative Carly Macer, gets up and says, great, you want to help? This is a way that you can help. And then they vote it down. And this is the same thing that we've been going through, like you pointed out, years and years. The same year that we exempt gold bullion, they voted down exempting tampons and pads for women. It's very clear that women's health is not a priority. This should be seen as a workforce issue. This should be seen as a child health issue. This should be seen as a quality life issue, and it routinely gets handled as a second-class bill.
There were process issues raised by Republicans here, and they used the process, though, to shut these bills out. So when Democrats have authored bills so they can get a fiscal analysis done, they just never get heard. And then they're used to knock down amendments proposed on the floor. If they try to offer those amendments in committee, they're not heard or they're voted down. So at what point can Republicans no longer cry process?
This was clearly, I mean, the fact that you fire these on the floor makes it clearly about politics. And there is a legitimate conversation to have here on tax policy around these types of products, right? The motivation for the RV legislation, if we were like the world's leading manufacturer of breast pumps, then we'd probably have a lot more conversations about breast pump tax policy. But we're not. But we are the world's leading manufacturer of RVs,
well,
and there
clear,
are questions
not...
about... There is confusion about, and has been in the past, that they've tried to deal with in the past on reciprocity, on sales tax rates, because people that are buying RVs in Indiana aren't from Indiana, so they had to figure out some tax implications of that strategy. But there's a lot more to this than just Republicans supposedly being against women.
But they control the process, and they've said that this type of infant mortality is a priority.
Yeah.
Then start it at the beginning of the process.
That's
how
fair.
Do you have
and
to
they should.
Women lift,
I,
making
sure.
lifts
I just
want to
say
every
one
time.
Thing. I'm a little... tired of this idea that every time there's an uncomfortable vote on the floor for the House, that it's determined to be a political ploy to embarrass.
I don't believe that.
But
I don't believe
you
it's always
kind
politics.
Of just
I think this
said
one.
That.
Well, I believe this one is.
I think
I
that
don't
questions
there is.
The integrity of the, these lawmakers.
Representative Macer would have gladly worked with Republican lawmakers across the aisle at the beginning of the process if it meant that this bill was going to get
enough.
A hearing
that's fair
and
enough,
heard.
I do believe this
and
is
it's
le-
not.
This is a legit
so she had
debate.
To use every tool in her arsenal
well,
to make this
argument.
But
you just said presumes there's never a political amendment on the floor. And that,
well,
whenever I suggest that I'm attacking the integrity of legislators, which I'm not, the floor is a proper place to use politics. I'm not saying there shouldn't be politics in this process or some long-term thinking that we're going to use this against Republicans in the Democrats are going to use this against Republicans in the fall. That's clearly what that clearly happens all the time. And I'm not saying that amounts to lack of integrity because politics is a reality of this process.
All right. Well, finally, the Senate Education Committee this week amended the bill that requires the national motto, "In God We Trust," be posted in every Hoosier classroom. We talked about this previously. The measure now makes that optional, which, as Nikki Kelly has helpfully pointed out for many of us, state law already does that in a couple of different places, in fact. So, Elise Schrock, does that change the bill make it more or less useful?
I don't know why we spend our time on this stuff. There are clearly things we need to be spending our committee time on, and this is what we rehash every year in a short session.
Yeah, Nikki pointed this out.
Three meetings
this was on the calendar.
I'm for that. I'm with Elise.
If you want to talk process, let's talk about what we're spending our time on and what we're not spending our time on.
We asked this question when we talked about this bill in a bigger way, I think it was last week, or the week before, actually. Like, would we be surprised to see it come up again? And then it came up twice. Like, how much farther does this go?
I don't know. I mean, this idea that they don't want to embarrass their colleagues by not moving forward with a bill... They just got to get over that. Sometimes a bill just isn't the right policy.
It's like a chronic disease in that building right now.
Yeah, and just move on.
You're the gatekeepers of this type of policy.
As we see some of our veteran, should we say more strong-willed legislative leaders retiring or doing other things, it'll be a real test of the newcomers to see if they can sort of
step up and fill that void.
Yeah.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.